The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.
A member of the Beasley Broadcast Group, this is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
This is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Leave your worries back on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Oh, say, you hear that pitter-pat? That happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in a shade, oh, with those blues on parade. But I'm not afraid. I'm a rover who crossed over. And if I never have a cent, I'll be rich like Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street. Be rich like Rockefeller, gold dust at my feet on that sunny, sunny side of the street. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. That was Ted Lewis with a 1930 recording of Sunny Side of the Street. And what a voice. I don't know, I think that's a little bit more of someone who does, they said here in some of the liner notes, a hammy refrain he was famous for. He was also the guy who apparently used to preface every piece that they were doing. He would say, "Is everybody happy?" And I don't know how happy he was. He didn't sound particularly happy in that particular rendition. Anyway, thanks for joining us. This is Tube Talk. We are here for the music lover, the radio collector, the radio restorer, the person who still likes to listen to the radio, person who still likes to have a pal on the other side of the microphone and actually listen to a vintage antique set. Anyway, just a few random musings here. As I was on the subway on my way over, you know, things from the past, not only radios and good music, but do you know anybody who still uses Brill Cream? That's a question for you. Or how about somebody who still whistles? Because occasionally when I'll whistle, especially if I am on the subway, people will look at me like I have three heads. How about when was the last time you got your shoes shined? Or do you even have a pair of shoes that you would shine? And, you know, from a fashion standpoint, do you value being well shod? Does that mean anything to you, to your character, to your appearance? I certainly don't know, and it's all your business, but just some things I was thinking about, and certainly some things that have passed us on the streetcar of history here. We will bring back the discussion of the old radios. We will bring back the old music. We will bring back the old musical programs. But I don't know that I'm bringing back shoe shines and Brill Cream. And I guess if you were going to need to get your shoes shined, maybe you could ask somebody if they could spare a dime.
This is Rudy Valley again, stepping perhaps a bit out of character in singing a song from Americana, a song that has taken its audiences by storm, which may be explained by its theme, which is both poignant and different. Brother, can you spare a dime? They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodle dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Oh, yes, so brother, can you spare a dime? In a song that still has a certain poignancy even today, I guess, huh? Well, thanks again for listening to Tube Talk. on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM, or as we used to say, the standard broadcast band. And we also stream on the internet. And it's old-time radio night here on Tube Talk this evening, so I hope you enjoy. If you're fortunate enough to be listening on a restored vintage tube set, all the better. And I hope you enjoy the show sitting there in your comfy chair by that beautifully illuminated dial. And before we get on with the program tonight, let's have a little music to put us in the moodski, as Mr. Stiles might say. Ah, yes. Mr. Miller.
So just keep on wishing, and cares will go. Dreamers tell us dreams come true, it's no mistake, and wishes are the dreams we dream when we're awake. The curtain of night will part. If you are certain within your heart, so if you wish long enough, wish strong enough, you will come to know. Wishing will make it so.
Glenn Miller and his orchestra, with Ray Eberle handling the vocal work, Wishing Will Make It So. Ah, yes, a foggy day. Well, tonight we feature an Inner Sanctum episode from 1945, I believe recorded in August. We hope you enjoy, and this is where we practice our listening, and hopefully we get to experience a little bit different flavor of entertainment than we normally get on the program. So sit back and relax, enjoy, and try to put yourself back in time. This is a fun little show surrounding gamblers.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host. Welcome again through the squeaking door. Did you miss us? You know, we haven't been around to haunt you these last 8 weeks. Yes, that's right. Death takes a vacation. Where have we been? Oh, we spent our vacation in a nice, cool place. Underground. Of course, we missed your smiling faces, but where we went, everybody grinned. Yes, they couldn't help it. They were grinning skulls. Too bad you couldn't all come along.
Good evening, Mr. Host.
Well, hello, Mary Bennett. Say, Mary, on my vacation, I met someone who had something very nice to say about Lipton tea. Yes, it was a ghost. And he said the flavor of Lipton's was out of this world.
I suppose you think that's a real testimonial.
But of course, no other product has ever been endorsed by a ghost.
Well, I can tell you that Lipton's isn't looking for such compliments. What pleases them is the fact that more real people drink Lipton tea than any other brand. And what's more, they drink it all year round. Right now, lots of folks are enjoying Lipton's as an iced beverage, because it certainly makes a cold meal taste better. Yes, and Lipton's iced tea is grand between meals, too. It's a welcoming, refreshing drink to serve when your guests drop in at your house. You see, Lipton tea has that famous brisk flavor. Now, that word brisk, B-R-I-S-K, means that Lipton's always tastes fresh and full-bodied, never flat or wishy-washy. So get acquainted with Lipton's real soon, won't you, folks?
Yes, and if you'd like to get acquainted with murder real soon, then listen to Dead Man's Deal. It's an original radio play by that chill master, Emil Tepperman. And our star tonight is Larry Haynes, who plays the role of Joe Lester. It all happened to Joe Lester, who's really a small-time gambler and who had no business in that big-time game with Barney Flood and Dan Kilmer and Nick Zapparetti and the others. But it's really Lester's story. Oh, here he is to tell it to you.
I guess it was the biggest poker game I ever took a hand in. It was in Barney Flood's room, number 327, the Brandon Hotel. They were all big shots. I had to play a careful game. I only had about $3,000, and if I didn't nurse it, a single deal could wipe me out.
What's the matter, Lester? Playing kind of tight, Alan Joe.
Whatever, Barney. Man's entitled to play his own game, isn't he?
Sure. Maybe you don't belong in this one. You need guts for this game. You tell him, Dan.
Maybe Lester doesn't know what guts are, buddy.
Now listen, you.
Don't try to get tough, Lester. It wouldn't be healthy.
Lester sought me, Dan. So because I took his girl away from him. How didn't you, Lester?
Suppose we leave Louise out of this, Barney. If she prefers you, that's okay with me.
That's mighty big of you, Lester.
That's why I hated Barney Flood.
Yeah.
He'd taken Louise away from me. And Louise was the only thing in the world I loved. And what was worse, Barney Flood and his man Dan Kilmer were laughing at me because they knew I didn't have the guts to do anything about it. But then it came. The hand I'd been waiting for. Dan Kilmer was dealing. Barney Flood opened blind.
I opened for 1,000.
I dropped.
That's me.
The others all dropped out. But when I picked up my 5 cards, I found I had 3 aces. This was the way I'd wanted it. Just Barney Flood and me. and me with a strong hand before the buy. Now I'd show him who had guts. I counted out $2,000 in $100 bills and shoved them out on the table. I see you, Bonnie. And raise your $1,000.
Oh. So our little Lester's waking up. Okay, I see the raise. Just the two of us, hmm?
How many cards, Bonnie?
One.
Right. And how many do you want, Big Shot?
I'll take two.
There you are.
My hands were a little clammy as I picked them up. I looked at the cards. And suddenly I felt as if I'd inherited the whole universe. I had bought an extra ace. I held four aces.
Well, Big Shot, I bought something here. I think it's the winning hand. I'm going to bet the works. Here. All the cash I have with me. $90,000.
$90,000.
I felt the sweat on my hands as I watched him push the money out on the table. $90,000 he was betting. And I had him beat with my four aces. But I couldn't see his bet. All I had was about $1,000.
Come on, Big Shot. What are you waiting for?
You know I haven't got that much money.
And you shouldn't be playing in this game, Tin Horn.
You're taking advantage of me, Bonnie. You're trying to show me up. You know I have to drop out even with a better hand.
Oh, so you think you have a better hand, eh?
Make the bet inside my limit, and you'll see.
All right, Lester. We'll see what kind of a gambler you really are. Here, I'll withdraw this $90,000 bet. I'll make another kind of bet. A bet you can see. If you have the guts.
Well, what kind of bet?
I'll bet my life against your life. The man who loses this deal agrees to commit suicide.
For a full minute after Barney Flood made his proposition, the room was so quiet you could hear a pin drop. Barney Flood and I sat facing each other across the table, our closed cards in our hands. These were the biggest stakes men had ever played for. A life against a life. The other players were stunned and frightened by it. They wanted no part of it. One by one, they made lame excuses and faded from the room.
Hi, Dan.
Only Dan Kilmer was left with Barney and me.
Look, Barney, why should you risk your life against this punk's life?
This is the way it's going to be, Dan. Lester hates me. Don't you, Lester?
Yes, Barney. I hate you.
You see, Dan, he hates me because deep down inside of him, he knows he isn't as good as I am. All right. This is the showdown. One of us walks out of this room alive. The loser stays here with a bullet in his brain. Is that okay with you, Lester?
Yeah. Yeah, sure, it's okay with me, but I don't want Dan in the room. It's just between you and me. Let him go out before we uncover our cards.
All right.
Well, listen, boss.
You heard him, Dan, just the two of us.
Okay.
Leave your gun here on the table, Dan.
I don't like
it. Do as I say.
Okay.
Thanks. Now go down to the lobby and wait.
So long.
I'll be waiting in the lobby.
Okay, Lester. There's no backing out now. We'll open our hands. The loser picks up that gun and blows his brains out.
This was the minute I'd been waiting for. My lips were dry. I wet them with my tongue. Now, at last, I had Barney Flood exactly where I wanted him. Okay, Barney. Read them and weep. How do you like these? One ace, two aces, three aces, four aces. How do you like them, Barney?
Four aces, hmm?
I kept my eyes on Barney. I wanted to milk the last drop of satisfaction out of that moment. But he was a born gambler. His face didn't show a thing. He sighed, and slowly he began to turn over his own cards. Three of hearts, four of hearts, five of hearts, six of hearts, seven of hearts. A straight flush.
Well, Lester, straight flush beats four of a kind.
You only bought one card.
That's right.
I went in with 3, 4, 5, and 6 of hearts. I bought the 7 of hearts.
A straight flush. I can't believe it. I've lost.
Yes, Lester. You've lost. You've lost your life. And a gambler always pays up. Here's the gun, Lester.
Curled my finger around the trigger. I stood up and leaned across the table. I pointed the gun at Barney Flood and I shot him in the head. Now I had to work fast and carefully. I had it all figured out. When I shot Barney, I leaned over the table so the barrel of the gun was close to his head. There were powder burns on his temple around the wound. I wiped my fingerprints off the gun and pressed Barney's hand around the barrel. Next, I turned my attention to the card table. This was important. I left my 4 aces intact where I laid them out. But I changed Barney's hand slightly. I removed the 7 of hearts, replaced it in the deck, and riffled through till I found the 7 of diamonds. I substituted this for the 7 of hearts. Now Barney's hand was no longer a straight flush. It was an ordinary straight. And my 4 aces were better. So now it looked as if I had won the game. I was ready. I picked up the phone and asked the operator to connect me with the police. Hello? Police headquarters? This is Joe Lester. I'm in room 327 at the Brandon Hotel. Barney Flood has just committed suicide.
Well, it looks as if Lester has carefully set the stage for foul play. He has to be careful if he wants people to believe that Barney has committed suicide. Because that's the last thing in the world a man would do. How about it, Mary? What side are you betting on? I'll give you odds that Lester isn't caught.
Why, you know very well that I don't bet.
It's old-time radio night on Tube Talk here on WRCA 1330 AM. We're listening to the Inner Sanctum this evening.
And now, let's go back to Joe Lester. Let's see if his airtight scheme to make Barney Flood's murder look like suicide goes over with the police. Yes, and let's hope it's not so airtight that it leaves him dangling in air at the end of a hangman's noose.
At headquarters, all the players told the same story. How Barney Flood had proposed a suicide bet and how they'd all cleared out. Inspector Larkin dismissed them all, leaving only Dan Kilmer and myself in the office with him and the stenographer.
Now, you, Kilmer.
Yes, Inspector.
You're Barney Flood's right-hand man?
Well, you know I have a private detective's license. Barney paid me to be his bodyguard.
You worked for Barney a long time?
That's right.
Lester says you left your gun on the table. Is that right?
That's right. Then I went out.
Okay, Lester. It's your story from here. What happened after Kilmer went out?
Well, Barney and I uncovered our hands. He had a small straight, but I had 4 aces. You saw the cards lying there on the table?
Yeah, I saw them. What happened then?
Well, Barney said, well, I guess I lose. He picked up the gun. I tried to stop him, but he said a gambler always pays up. And he put the gun to his head to pull the trigger before I could stop him.
Hmm. How do you think of that story, Kilmer?
I think he lies.
Makes you think so?
I can't say.
Well, that's no evidence. Looks like suicide. I'm afraid there's no charge told, John Lester. I wish there was.
Hey, you mean I'm free to go?
Yeah, sure. Go on. Get out.
Dan Kilmer gave me a dirty look, but I only grinned at him. I got up and went to the door. Everything was going my way. I was rid of Barney Flood. I'd committed the perfect murder. And now I was free to go to Louise.
Funny.
What's awful funny, Louise?
How Barney killed himself. Here's your drink.
Oh, thanks. There's nothing funny about it. He lost and he paid off.
Yeah, I know, but somehow I can't imagine Barney losing a hand like that.
Now, listen, Louise, you stop thinking about Barney. He's dead, see, and I'm alive, and I'm not letting any other man have you. Is that plain?
Yes, darling, it's plain.
Come here, baby. You know, I'm crazy about you.
You seem to have changed. You seem so strong.
Yeah, you bet. From now on, nothing stops me. We're getting married tomorrow. We won't wait.
I'd better answer the phone.
I'll let it ring.
No, you better let me answer it.
Well, okay, go ahead, but make it snappy, will you?
I will, darling. Hello?
I watched her at the phone. And she was more beautiful than anything I'd ever known. That was the happiest I'll ever be. That one short moment while I watched her at the phone. And then it was over.
Yes. Yes, he's here, but... who is this? What are you talking about? No. No, it can't be. Please. Please, I...
Her voice trailed off into a sob, and she came up. She looked as if all her life had been drained out of her body by that phone call. Louise, who was that? Who was that on the phone? What did he say?
He said to remind you about the Seven of Hearts. He said you know what he meant.
Seven of Hearts. A card I'd substituted in Barney Flood's hand. Oh, but no one could know about the Seven of Hearts. Barney was the only one. And he was dead. Who gave you that message, Louise? Who was that on the phone?
He didn't give his name, but I recognized the voice.
Louise, for heaven's sakes, tell me who it was.
I can't believe it, but I'd swear it was Barney Flood.
And then the phone rang again.
It's the phone again. He's calling back.
I'll answer. Pushed Louise roughly aside. Slowly, I walked toward the ringing phone, almost in a daze, and picked it up. I think I must have been expecting it, because I wasn't surprised when I heard that voice. I only felt numb.
Hello, Lester. I'm waiting for you. Outside the house, across the street. Won't you come out and talk to me? About the Seven of Hearts.
Seven of Hearts. He wanted to talk to me about the Seven of Hearts. And he was waiting outside. But who? I dropped the phone and went to the window, pulled back the blind and peered out. At first I saw nothing. And then I spotted him. A shadowy figure standing in a doorway across the street, with his hat brim pulled low over his face. And just then a car swept down the street. Its headlights illuminated the doorway, and I got a quick look at the face. There was blood dripping from under the hat brim. I'll never remember how I managed to get out of Louise's apartment. Not the front way. I didn't dare go out into the street with that shadowy figure waiting out there. I stumbled blindly down the back stairs, flight after flight, almost tripping, skinning my hands on the banisters, bruising my elbows, but I didn't care. I wanted to get away from there.
Taxi, mister?
Huh? What?
Taxi, mister.
Taxi. Yeah, sure. Get going, quick.
Sure, but where to?
Where to? I didn't care. Anywhere, as long as it was away from here. Home, that was the place. I'd go home and shut myself up and not answer the phone. 17 Glidden Road, quick.
Right.
I heaved a sigh of relief as we pulled away. Out of pure instinct, I suppose, I looked out the rear window. Suddenly, the blood began to pound in my head like a thunderous avalanche. Because back there at the corner was that same shadowy figure, getting into another cab, pointing after my taxi. Faster, faster, driver. You gotta go faster.
Hey, what's wrong, mister?
Look, that cab behind us. $20 if you lose it.
What cab?
That one, you fool. A cab behind us.
Hey, one of us must be nuts. Or maybe you had a couple too many. There isn't any cab behind us.
I turned around and looked again. My driver was right. The street was empty as far back as I could see.
Here you are, mister. 17 Glidden Road.
I got out of the cab and saw that the driver was looking at me as if he thought I was drunk or crazy. My shirt was wet with perspiration. My head began to throb and everything swam before my eyes. Then a voice began to whisper in my ear like a terrible refrain.
Seven of Hearts. Seven of Hearts.
Seven of Hearts.
Weakly against the taxi
seven
cab.
Seven of Hearts.
And throw Mister look down hearts. The street.
Seven
there
of Hearts. Seven of Hearts.
Same shadowy figure with a hat that was pulled low over the bloody face.
Seven of Hearts.
Walking
seven
toward
of
me.
Seven of
slowly.
Hearts. Seven
toward
of
me.
Hearts.
Seven of faster. Hearts. Coming toward me faster.
Hearts.
And the refrain ringing in my
hearts.
Ears. I couldn't
seven
stand it. I flung myself into
seven
the cab.
Of hearts.
I wanted safety.
Seven
I
of Hearts.
Drive the police. That's
seven
what
of Hearts.
Headquarters, I burst into Inspector Larkin's office. He was in there talking to Dan Kilmer.
What's your idea of barging in here, Lester?
I've got to talk to you, Inspector.
What's wrong, big shot? You look all broken.
You keep out of this, Dan. I've come to see the Inspector.
What do you want?
I want protection. You got to protect me.
Protect against whom?
Against Bonnie Flood. He's come back.
Is he gag?
No, it's no gag.
That guy's gone nuts.
No, I tell you, Bonnie Flood's come back. At first, I thought it was a phony. But now I'm sure it's Bonnie Flood.
How do you know it's Bonnie Flood?
Because... I stopped short. I'd almost said too much. I couldn't tell him about the Seven of Hearts. I couldn't tell him why I was sure it couldn't be anybody else but Barney Flood.
Get out of here, Lester. I've got no time to waste.
But you've got to assign an officer to protect me. I'm afraid to go home.
Look, Lester, I think you're going nuts the way Dan says. If I assigned an officer to you, everybody'd say I was going nuts, too. Signing a cop to protect a man against a ghost.
But I insist.
Get out!
Look, Dan, will you help me?
What? Oh, me?
What, you're not working now, are you?
No, I lost my job when Barney died.
Well, look, how about a job? Working for me, protecting me, huh?
Against a ghost? Against Barney Flood's ghost?
Oh, what do you care as long as I pay you?
Okay, Lester. You've hired me.
Good. Come on, then. Come home with me. I want you to sit up with me all night, huh? Dan Kilmer came home with me. And we sat up, whiling the time away, playing two-handed poker.
My dear Lester.
Yeah, sure.
So you're really scared, huh, Lester?
Don't laugh at me, Dan. You'd be scared, too, if you'd seen what I saw.
You mean, like the guy with the blood on his face?
How'd you know about that?
And the telephone call about the Seven of Hearts?
The Seven of...
I figured that stuff would sort of get you on edge.
What do you mean?
I mean that I'm the one that planted that man outside Louise's apartment. That was me on the telephone.
You?
Sure. That cab driver was my man, too. I had him planted out in back of Louise's house. He was waiting for you to come out the back way. You see, Lester, I had you figured right. Every move.
You did all that? What was the idea?
I wanted to get you right here. Like this. Afraid of your own shadow.
What? What for?
Pick them up.
Picked up the cards. I stared at them. It was four aces. The same hand I'd held with Barney Flood.
How would you like to make a little bet on your hand, Lester? Against mine. Say, your life against my life,
What do you mean?
Don't you get it yet? Here, I'll turn my cards over for you. See? Three of hearts, four of hearts, five of hearts, six of hearts, and the seven of hearts. You see, Lester, my hand does have the seven of hearts in it. So did Barney Flood's. Before you took it out.
How do you know about the Seven Hearts? For a long time, Dan Kilmer didn't say anything. He just sat there, looking at me. Then he got up, took out his gun, laid it on the table. Then he went to the door.
How did I know about the Seven of Hearts? You see, Lester, I dealt the other hand, too.
Barney Flood was right. A gambler must always pay up. The gun is ready on the table. And now, I'm ready too.
He's in a very grave situation now. Yeah, so grave, he needs the help of an undertaker. But he was only a beginner in crime. He might have done better if he hadn't come to such an untimely end.
Well, I've got no sympathy to waste on him. He shouldn't have gotten into that poker game in the first place.
Oh, I don't know. I never forget the time I played strip poker with a bunch of ghosts. Say, was I lucky that day? Yes, you should have seen those ghosts shedding their ectoplasm.
I declare, I don't know why you're always talking about ghosts.
Oh, they're such lucky guys. They always keep cool. Even in the summer, the least little breeze goes right through them.
Well, I'd rather be a human being. Real honest folks have a good way of keeping cool, too. They just make themselves a refreshing pitcher of Lipton's iced tea. Yes, there's nothing like Lipton's to perk you up on a hot day. I guess it's that famous brisk flavor that makes all the difference. It's so rich and lively. Whether you drink it iced or hot, there's nothing that can beat Lipton's. The tea with the brisk flavor.
And now a word of advice. You can't afford to gamble with death because the loser never gets a chance to stage a comeback. And what's more, friends, if all the corpses on this program were laid end to end, they'd be a lot more comfortable. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Wantons by Patrick Quentin. Yes, and next week's Inner Sanctum story, directed by Hyman Brown and brought to you by Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup. Next week's story is going to blow the tubes in your radio. It's about a beautiful woman who marries a dead man. Now there's an unusual romance. And this graveyard Romeo has second sight and always knows who's going to be murdered next. Well, of course he's got second sight. He lost his first sight when he died. See? Now it's time to close the squeaking door until next Tuesday. So, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Well, you know, it just doesn't really make me want to go have a brisk cup of tea, then go out and play some poker. But I have to say that squeaking door is one of the most recognizable sound effects in the world of radio. And for those of you who may be fans of radio plays, you may remember Hyman Brown from the CBS Mystery Theater. It was the same fellow who put those together who was the producer of The Inner Sanctum, which ran, I believe, for about 11 years and put out some real good shows.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm there was a chick, the prettiest chick I know. With a little curve here and a little curve there, this chick, she had curves everywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And oh, this chick, she had a walk, E-I-E-I-O. And how this walk would drive 'em wild, swinging to and fro. With a little wiggle here and a little wiggle there, man, this chick had wiggles to spare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. When she went walking in the town, E-I-E-I-O, the local gentry popped their eyes. Tarnation, what a show. With a gold dang here and a gosh darn there, heavens to Betsy, I do declare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. There was a barn dance Saturday night, E-I-E-I-O. And the fellas came for miles around just to see her do-si-do. with a promenade here and a promenade there. At a square dance, boy, this chick was no square. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. I used to be a traveling man, E-I-O. Until I hit MacDonald's place, things were mighty slow. With a little chick here and a little chick there, I didn't have a real chick anywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. This farmer's daughter knocked me out, E-I-E-I-O. I asked MacDonald for her hand, and Pappy hollered, go. With a little curve here and a little wiggle there, a gold dang here and a gosh darn there, a do-si-do here and a promenade there. Got my own private county fair, 'cause old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-O, I-O.
Like, I really have to tell you who that was. Well, thanks for tuning in tonight. We hope you enjoyed the Inner Sanctum Mystery, Dead Man's Deal from 1945. And it's nice to have you here. This is where we stole down Nostalgia Street to the retro world, where we still have some civility, some etiquette. We still play some really good music. We'll even play the occasional old-time program. We have a good interview with folks from the radio hobby, radio collecting hobby. This is Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 on the glorious standard broadcast band. We appreciate your listening. Please tell a friend. If you have any comments you'd like to share with us, you can reach us at tubetalk1@gmail.com. So please send us your radio rant or rave. If you have a pithy comment concerning the show or something pertaining to your latest restoration project or your latest radio find, we can share it with the audience. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a suggestion on who you think would be a good guest or a topic for a future show. You can drop us a line at tubetalk1@gmail.com. tubetalk1@gmail.com.
Yippee-yay, there'll be no wedding bells for today. I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle,
jingle, jangle,
as I go riding merrily along.
Jingle, jangle.
And they sing, oh, ain't you glad you're single?
Jingle, jangle.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Jingle, jangle.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Though I may have done some fooling, this is why I never fell. 'Cause I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
Jingle, jangle.
And I go riding merrily along. They sing, oh, ain't you glad you're single?
Jingle, jangle.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Jingle, jangle.
Some fooling, this is why I never found that I never got spells.
that jingle, jangle, jingle.
I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
As I go riding merrily
as
along.
As I go riding merrily
and
along.
And they sing, oh, ain't you glad
and
you're single?
Sing, oh, ain't you glad
and
that you're single?
And that song ain't so very far
and
from wrong.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Kay Kaiser and his orchestra with Trudy Irwin singing. Mr. Song and Dance himself.
Requested this evening, it's formal, a top hat, a white tie, and tails. Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails. Because I'm invited to step out this evening with top hat, white tie, and tails. Oh, I'm putting on my top hat, tying up a white tie, brushing off my tails. I'm dudeing up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails. I'm stepping out, my dear, to breathe an atmosphere that simply reeks with class. And I trust that you'll excuse my dust when I step on the gas. For I'll be there, putting down my top hat, mussing up a white tie, dancing in my tail. Dancing in my tails, putting down my top hat, mussing up my white tie, dancing in my tails.
Can almost see him dancing away there with those taps, eh? And that was the Boswell Sisters, and that's, I guess, what will happen to me if we don't straighten up and fly right here on Tube Talk. And it's about time to put out the lights for the night. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Was a great success. Oh, didn't Mrs. Smith look stunning? Did you notice Mrs. Jones' new dress? What did Mr. Brown say to Uncle Benny? Just one of those things, you know, he had a few too many. Sure was a hungry crowd. They didn't leave a scrap for Rover. We ought to feel real proud and mighty glad the darn thing's over. No more company to feed, no more papers left to read. What to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. No more anything to drink, leave those dishes in the sink. What to do about it? Simply nighty-night and so to sleep. You're waiting now for me to say, I love you more and more and more, dear. You're looking younger every day, so help me. You never were so sweet before, dear. No more money in the bank. No cute baby we can spank. What to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. Let's put out the lights and go to sleep.